Oh, that song was lovely. Thank you. And so as Tim said, I'm John Connor. I'm going to be talking about the spiritual danger of perfectionism, or the straitjacket of perfectionism, and how to overcome it. And before Ellen was hired, I did speak here as a guest speaker a few times. I think Cherie was the one who organized for me to come down and talk. And there was one time while Ellen was here, I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago, she was going to be out of town. She asked me to speak for her. And it was on, I think she was doing a sermon series on Keep a True Lent. And some of you might have read that book. And she said, you know, yeah, can you do like chapter 4 and 5 out of the book? And I said, oh yeah, sure, I can do that. And then after we got off the phone, I realized that I think I'd made it through all my Unity training without ever having read that book. So I got it. And I do recommend it, though. I can remember one of the key things from that talk, from the book, is that Charles spoke of this phrase that has stuck with me. And he talked about that on the spiritual path, we are moving beyond reason to pure realization. So take that into meditation this week and see what's revealed for you. Anybody here ever been to the Broken Spoke in Austin? Yeah, you too. I was there last night. It was great. Hadn't two-stepped in about 25 years, but had a fun. We did do the Cotton Eye Joe, so that was great. And also, it was good to hear about that focusing on the power of imagination this month. And I was thinking about how imagination, we oftentimes we just go on automatic pilot. Like the sort of the automatic thoughts that go on in our heads, it is imagination, but it's not directed imagination. So this is why we so often, and maybe it's just me, but you know, you're driving down the road, you're doing something that doesn't require a lot of thought, and what you tend to go into is automatic negative thought. And so sometimes when, you know, driving, you'll find yourself ending up almost hunting for shame, hunting for embarrassing moments in your past, and why am I doing this? And I think, you know, our consciousness seeks out drama sometimes. And so one technique you can use to kind of pull the plug on this negative automatic thinking is realizing that if you're in the midst of thinking about some past experience, some time when you were embarrassed in the eighth grade, that's happening because what's going on right now is very peaceful and comfortable. Okay? So next time that happens, remember, I'm driving down the road, I'm going to my work, I'm going to wherever I'm going, and my mind is trying to entertain itself, so it starts hunting for these moments. So just bring it back to everything is good right now. So we're talking about perfectionism. And so anybody here have a thought on like how you would define the word perfect or the concept of perfect? It's okay. We can be interactive a little bit. Without flaw. That's right. And so when we define perfect, it's always something like that, something done without flaw, something done with no mistakes. And so perfect is only actually seen through the lens of the negative. And so there's another secondary definition of perfect, which the first one that comes up in the dictionary is this one, flawless, without mistakes. The second one is something that we can more easily embrace, which is complete. Something that's perfect is complete, or it's whole. And so a good way to think about this is that, let's say you're building a house, and that you've made a hole to put a window in, and you start putting the window in, you're banging it in, and it doesn't fit right, and the window breaks. Okay, so you take that window frame out, you kind of size it better, and you put it back in, and it fits. And the whole picture, including the broken window, is complete. So in other words, we're not perfect because we have no flaws or no errors in our thinking anymore. We are perfect in the biblical sense of, when Jesus said, "Be therefore perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect." It's just being complete. Being complete in how you're approaching the moment. And not so much, I have to avoid making mistakes. Because when we try to avoid making mistakes, we tend to be kind of paralyzed. And so we kind of shrink down. I'm going to pull up a slide here and kind of explain what I'm talking about a bit. Well, this is a key point that I'm going to be talking about today. Perfection prevents you from following your dreams, from attempting the deepest desires of your heart, because it carries such a great internal risk if you fail. And so we're going to have a look at this little graphic up here. And this is a sophisticated circles graphic. And I'm a visual learner, and maybe you are too, and sometimes graphics can help. So if you look at that circle, that dotted circle, it's by the A. Then we move out to the solid circle B. Now that circle B is just a representation of your current functioning. And you can think of any aspect of your life. It could be your spiritual growth. It could be your creative life. It could be where you are on, say, a dream of starting a business. So B represents kind of where you are. And that dotted circle C represents your potential, where you can grow to if you keep growing. Circle D, that solid outer circle, represents perfectionism, represents having a goal that is so far out there that it's kind of ridiculous. It's sort of like you take your first art class and it doesn't look like a Rembrandt, and so I'm a failure, okay? And so that's not a healthy standard to have. And one of the things about perfectionism is, an easy way to think of it is unreasonable internal standards of how we should perform, how we should perform at work, how our spiritual understanding and spiritual life is going. And so what we're doing today is looking at what are reasonable standards to have. Because reasonable standards means making little inroads from that B toward the C. So if you're in an art class, maybe the first thing you're drawing is stick figures, and then the second thing you're drawing maybe has a little belly on it. It's like these little inroads, these little steps forward that we're taking that is going to make a difference. And similarly in our spiritual life, that if we are thinking that Jesus is our standard, then I haven't been walking on water yet, so I must be a failure. I know that's an exaggeration, but we sometimes do that to ourselves, that if we're not, or even if it's a more contemporary person, maybe it's Deepak Chopra or Charles Fillmore or these kind of folks, that if the standard is outrageous, then we tend to fail. And that circle E represents a kind of a loop between constantly going for a standard that's unreasonable, failing at it, as you will do when it's an unreasonable standard, and then keep going back and forth. And this is where some addiction comes from, is that this trying and failing constantly for this unreasonable standard, you start to feel pretty bad about yourself. And so when you feel bad about yourself often enough, you tend to want to find a way to not feel bad. And so some people choose addictive behaviors, drugs, alcohol, sex, gambling, overeating, what have you. And so what we are looking at is how can we move forward in a realistic way without having these unreasonable standards. How I kind of discovered that I was a perfectionist is, anybody ever taken one of those Myers-Briggs tests? And then there's another one, they always have, all of them have acronyms. There's one I took years ago called DISC. And some of you have taken that. It stands for Dominance, Influence, Support, and Caution, I think. And so everything that the test kind of put back as information seemed reasonable to me, except it showed me very high in perfectionism. And I thought, no, that's not right at all. You know, if you saw my office, if you saw what, you know, my desk looks like, it, because you think a perfectionist is going to have like everything squared up at right angles on their desk, everything's clean, and I haven't been living that way. And so I realized, well, yeah, I'm kind of a failed perfectionist. You know, I had these standards, but it's like, yeah, I'm never going to make it, so we'll have a we'll have a messy desk. But it was a key understanding for me to start to realize that it was true, and that it was standing in the way of my spiritual growth and of my creative growth. You know, there's a there's an author named John Irving, and excellent writer. And some years back, I was a book of his was open. The book was called The Cider House Rules, and they made a movie out of it. And so I kind of thought of myself as a writer. I'd done some article writing and written a play, short play. And so I was reading the book. It was just open in the middle, so I just started reading. And I was enough of a writer to see that what this guy was doing, that I could see in the sentences that there was an iceberg underneath the surface of the sentences of thinking and creativity that in work that he had put into that, that I thought, I'll never get there. I'm never going to be that good. So I'm not going to write any fiction because this is the new standard. And that's also something I'm challenging this morning. That it's great to appreciate great art and great writing and inspiring spiritual growth in another person. But it should never stop us. It should never stop us from moving forward. And a helpful example of this is that I was giving this talk some years back at a Unitarian Universalist church. And so at the end of the talk, there was a fellow who stood up and he said, you know, I've been a guitarist for 25 years. He said, I can play you any song you can name, and there won't be any mistakes. It's going to be good. And he said, but whenever I try to write a song, I know it's crummy, and so I stop. And so what he realized is this thing that what I talk about is the difference between our ability to evaluate a piece of art or a piece of writing or a piece of music. The difference between being able to evaluate it to being able to create it. So for instance, we'll think about a couple songs. Like there's a song like, say, Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin. A great song, kind of epic lyrics and epic music. And then there's a song like Sugar Sugar by the Archies. Anybody? Ah, sugar. Ah, honey, honey. Yeah, both of those were hit songs around the same time. And so, but there's a different quality in those two songs. And so what this guitarist was talking about, and I realized that it affects a lot of us, is that his ability and our ability to tell what a good song is like is at a 9. And our ability to create a good song is at a 1. And so this gap right here is where all the paralysis comes from. The paralysis from our deciding that, you know, we want to pursue a more vigorous spiritual life or we want to write a song. And so the guitarist said, when he was finished talking, he said, your talk today made me realize that what I need to do is go home and write a shitty song. And so since we're in church, I'm not going to say shitty anymore. But he's going to write a crummy song. And so that's a big part of the point, you know, is for us to be willing to write the crummy song, to stand up, or if we're in a group of people in a spiritual discussion and we have this half-baked idea that we think maybe is right, to put it out there. And maybe it doesn't get responded to. But that's all right, because we're growing. We're taking steps. We're moving forward. And that's, you know, that's what I want to focus on and hopefully inspire today, so that we can use our imagination and not judge it to death when it's just starting out. Because a sign of perfectionistic tendencies in you is, for instance, if you have a song, a book, a play, a piece of art, maybe a business plan for a new business, and if you kind of stopped at about a third of the way through, and maybe you didn't even decide, I am not going to do this anymore, but somehow you never picked it up again, you never brought it out again. And that's because when we think of some new idea, maybe an idea for a book or a song, that it's in the ethers, in a sense, in the ethers of our consciousness. And so when it's in the ethers, it's kind of perfect. It's kind of flawless. And it's like only as we bring it into manifestation does it start to become what it is. Like when I was 19, I started writing a play. And I'm 3 pages in, and I'm just picturing the Tony Award I'm going to get for the play. And I think I'd like to have David Mamet give me that Tony Award, and what kind of speech will I write? I'm on page 3 of the play. And then once I get to about page 20, I ended up not going back to it for a few years. I didn't decide to stop. But when things come out of the ether and into manifestation, they're only as good as they sort of objectively are. And so what was helpful to me is to realize I'm going to write a crummy play, you know, and I'm going to write some crummy articles. And there's this concept in mining for gold, is that there's the gold and then there's the dross. And the dross is sort of like the mud and the dirt and the rocks and the other stuff that come up that aren't the gold, but mining the dross, pulling up the dross, is part of the process of getting to the gold. And our point is getting to the gold. And there's no getting to the gold without pulling up the dross. And so it's all part of the process that we are growing in our spiritual understanding, we are growing in our creativity, and we have full permission. You have full permission from me, and I'm going to go ahead and speak for God right now. You have full permission from God to express at the level that you're expressing. You know, take the piano lessons that you always thought you'd want to take. And yeah, you're going to be struggling hard to play Jingle Bells for a while. But then maybe you'll get on and play to what you want to play. So you have permission to make mistakes. You have permission to make mistakes in your spiritual growth, and in your creativity, in speaking, in writing. And my prayer for you is that you make mistakes until the gold comes out and you let the gold out. So thanks for listening. Peace be with you. And now we're going to take some time in meditation, and I invite you to get comfortable and to be at peace. And these words I'm going to share, let them be as the voice of the divine in you, for you. Breathe, beloved, and be at peace. I am with you. I know you. I have known you since before you knew yourself. I know all of you. I know your beauty and your greatness. And yes, I know the things you wish no one knew. Yes, even that one you just thought of. And I know your assumptions that you sometimes have. You assume you are distant from me, that I retreat from you because of things you've said or haven't said, things you've done or haven't done. You aren't aware that your errors, your embarrassments and shames, to me, are like a toddler falling down while she learns to walk, or a child who knocks over the wooden blocks his sister was playing with. I am unmoved by all the things that you worry about. I am unmoved by all the things you worry about. You sitting there, are my very own. The Apostle Paul wrote truly. He said that there's nothing you can do to prevent me from loving you. So rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. And where is this away we shall go to? To where the mystic Rumi wrote about when he said, out beyond all the ideas of right doing and wrongdoing, there is a field. I will meet you there. Let us rest there in the field, in the silence now. Return to consciousness in the world, in this church, among your friends. Let it be so that you tarry in Jerusalem in your heart as you continue your day, being imbued with spirit from on high. Amen.